Hey everybody, this is Luisa. I have the pleasure of speaking to my friend and comrade, Jose Luis Granado Ceja. He is a journalist and political analyst based in Mexico City. He's a staff writer with Venezuela Analysis, covering regional and international issues, and writes a monthly opinion column for the Mexico Solidarity Project, which I recommend everybody subscribe to. He's currently pursuing a master's degree in the defense and promotion of human rights at la Universidad Autónoma de la Ciudad de México. So thanks so much for joining us.
Really happy to be here.
Okay. So I thought we would start off addressing some of what's been written in English language media about AMLO and about Mexico and the political situation in Mexico. So I'll just read off a couple of recent headlines. One is Mexican High Court overturns reforms rushed through Congress. That was the AP. Migrant massacre in Ciudad Juarez is rooted in U.S.-Mexico border policing. Mexico army ignored cartel warnings before mass student kidnapping, email show from The Guardian. Critics of Mexico's new electoral law changes say democracy is under attack. It's from NPR. And then also Mexico's new election reform is a blow to its young democracy, also NPR. So first off, can you please respond to some of what's been written in English language media about AMLO and about Mexico? And if it's easier for you, you can pick a topic and kind of start from there.
Sure. I think if we're looking at it in broad strokes, most of the coverage of Mexico tends to be one that I suspect is deliberately designed to paint a pretty grim picture about the country. We have to remember that corporate media outlets serve particular class interests. And in Mexico in 2018, we saw the election of a progressive president, Andrés Manuel López Obrador. Now, López Obrador represented a pretty radical break from the existing regime in Mexico. Mexico was dominated by neoliberal orthodoxy for decades, particularly starting in the 80s and really kind of deepening throughout the 90s and the 2000s. And so the arrival of López Obrador disrupted that. And it disrupted the class interests that many of these media outlets serve. Why? Because he's trying to govern for the great majority of this country, the working class, the campesinos, the low-income people, the middle class. And obviously, that affects the interests of people who have investments in the country, who are seeking to extract value out of Mexico, be it through cheap labor or through extraction of natural resources, or even having access to Mexico's internal market. And so this kind of coverage tends to be one that tries to make it seem like things are really bad in the country. And who shoulders the blame for that? Well, the president. And so I want to focus on one in particular, which has been this accusation that is a democratic backsliding, or that, you know, is returning to an authoritarian situation. This one in particular, I think, is really quite telling, revealing about this strategy by the people, the masters behind these corporate media outlets. And what they're trying to do is paint this picture that Mexico is a country that is on the brink of falling into a dictatorship. If you analyze some of the lines that come out in some of this coverage, what do they say? That López Obrador is worried about his pet projects, that he's worried about who will be his successor. But the truth is, Morena, López Obrador's party, is incredibly popular. The successor candidate hasn't been chosen. López Obrador can't run for re-election. He's constitutionally limited to only one term. And no matter who the candidate is, according to polls today, Morena wins. And so this notion that he needs to jig the game, that he needs to mess with the country's democratic institutions in order to ensure that a successor from his party is elected in 2024, is an outright falsehood. But it is designed to kind of sow that seed inside people's minds that the next government, which more likely than not is going to be a Moreno government, is somehow lacking democratic legitimacy, somehow doesn't have a mandate to deepen the transformation that is already taking place inside the country. Now, we can talk about the other issues. You know, for example, you mentioned the one around the army not knowing about the forced disappearance of the students. Now, if that is true, there should be consequences. Did the army hide information? Did they not act fast enough? there should be action on that. But it's been López Obrador who's pushed for the Truth Commission. It's been López Obrador who's worked with the parents of the disappeared students. He's the one who's been pushing to get to the truth of the situation. And very recently, he said in his morning press conference that, of course, it's been difficult because they have to confront a mafia. That's the word he uses. There's a lot of powerful interests at play here. But that's the thing that's never get mentioned, right? That the one government that is actually interested in finding out the truth, that isn't trying to engage in a cover-up like the previous government of Enrique Peña Nieto did, is López Obrador. And so you can see this kind of skewed perspective. It all obeys certain interests inside of Washington, inside of Ottawa, Brussels. These are all very familiar to people who follow Latin American politics. It's about trying to ensure the status quo, which is favorable to the transnational companies, which is favorable to transnational capital. And obviously, that is not favorable to the people of Mexico. And that's what we're trying to change here.
So one topic that we, those of us who live in the United States, have heard quite a bit about in the news is fentanyl, right? Often hearing stories about the fentanyl crisis in the United States from people dying of overdoses, but then also placing the blame on Mexico, right? So can you tell us a little bit about the way that English language media distorts the fentanyl crisis and broadly how illegal drugs have influenced Mexican politics?
It's really quite tragic because anybody who follows the issue knows there is a very serious addiction opioid crisis in the United States. People are suffering the consequences of that. But it's unfortunate that in the United States, it seems like so many policymakers, as opposed to treating it as a public health issue the way it should be, trying to figure out a way to get people off their being addicted to these substances, to stop misusing substances. Instead, as is typical often, it seems, when it comes to the United States, the answer is some kind of militarist strategy, some kind of engage in armed conflict. Well, if only we can cut off the supply of the precursors or the supply of fentanyl through use of force, then we'll be able to solve this crisis. I mean, that's been the strategy of the war on drugs. And I think it's pretty much universally accepted now that that strategy has never worked, right? It's one that's focused only on affecting the supply. But somehow, year after year, the supply continues to be available, in fact, increases in many instances. In the particular case of fentanyl, when it comes to Mexico, it actually has to do with China. So much of the precursor chemicals used to make synthetic opioids come from China. And the US put pressure on China in order to control its export. And that effectively did happen, right? It was much harder to get products from China into the United States in order to make these synthetic opioids. But of course, there's a market there, right? There are people who want to buy these drugs. And so who filled in that gap? Well, it was Mexican organized crime. You know, as long as there's some kind of lucrative business, organized crime will try to find a way to participate in it, right? That's why, you know, the selling of weed is no longer very profitable for Mexican cartels. So you actually see very little export of marijuana from Mexico into the United States. They go where the business is. And so they've been engaged in the import of these precursor chemicals and then the export illegal to the United States. And so that makes the United States feel like this is the solution. We just need to stop organized crime groups from being able to get these drugs onto the streets. But what's their solution been? You know, I think it's frankly absurd that what really is a radical fringe idea has entered the mainstream. This all started with a group of Republicans, far-right Republicans, who started conspiring about engaging in unilateral military force against organized crime groups. And these aren't just, you know, Joe Nobody, right? We saw editorials and opinion pieces from the likes of Bill Barr, Mike Pompeo, right? These were high-ranking cabinet members in Trump's government. There was a Rolling Stone article that said that Trump was taking this proposal of unilateral military strikes inside Mexico as seriously, that he wanted to see this drawn up and engaged in this kind of conspiracy against the United States' neighbor as soon as he wins and enters office again, if he does win, right? That's really, really concerning. I mean, we should be honest what this represents. It's an act of war, right? You can't unilaterally strike a country in its own territory the way that they are proposing, right? And so they're using this issue of fentanyl as an excuse to try to intimidate Mexico into engaged in the U.S. style of the war on drugs, to go after the, you know, the so-called kingpin strategy. That was the strategy of Felipe Calderón. That was the strategy of Enrique Peña Nieto, and it didn't work, right? López Obrador is pursuing a different one. He always emphasizes that we need to attend to the root causes, right? To ensure that the organized crime groups can't so easily recruit from the Mexican population, you know, offering young people opportunities and jobs and education and trainings. And so that's been the strategy of the government, which of course also includes a strategy of going after the organized crime groups. I think that's important to recognize that there is a grassroots citizen demand for the state to intervene and try to provide more security to the population.
So can I ask, could you give us just a brief background about, the history of the United States and Mexican border? Has the U.S. tried to invade Mexico before?
Yeah, we've actually had instances of that. You know, we have to remember the Mexican-American War. What was it fought over? It was fought over Mexican territory. Right. A lot of people point to 1846 as kind of the start of the war, and formally the war began. But to understand how we got there, we actually have to go back to 45 to the Texan, quote unquote, revolution. Right. This effort to break away from Mexico by people that had colonized that territory of Texas. And so this conflict was one that was driven by the United States's imperialist expansionist agenda. Right? It wanted to seize this territory and found an excuse to do so and engage in a conflict, an armed conflict with a much weaker militarily country, right? The U.S. had started to modernize its armed forces and Mexico was kind of still stuck in the past. And as a result, Mexico lost half of its territory to the United States, right? I think that's the clearest example of just how the expansionist drive today, the U.S. isn't seeking to necessarily conquer new territories, but it is interested in maintaining and expanding its empire through neocolonialism. And I think some of what we're seeing in terms of U.S. interest in Mexico's energy sector is driven by this kind of neocolonial logic. But that actually isn't even the only instance of U.S. intervention in Mexico. It was actually the U.S. ambassador to Mexico during the Mexican Revolution, Henry Lane, who actually pushed for the coup d'etat against Francisco I. Madero, the president at the time, and successfully helped install Victoriano Huerta, a right-wing coup plotter, into power. Eventually, the Mexican Revolution managed to, you know, resolve that contradiction and push out Huerta as well, consolidate the gains of the revolution, have a new constitution, et cetera, et cetera. But it shows that the links that the United States would go to in order to ensure its interests inside are protected. And once again, you know, to go back to this issue of fentanyl, you know, it feels like its interests are being affected by the policies of this government. So it's using this as an excuse to once again try to intimidate the country and try to force it to abide by its dictates. But I think the other important thing to note as well is that the Mexican people are not going to let that happen. We are seeing now a resurgence of a sense of duty to defend our national sovereignty. I won't forget the massive demonstration in the Zócalo here in Mexico City, totally filled, the sidelining streets also filled with people. And López Obrador makes a call directly saying yes to cooperation, but no to interventionism, you know, and that we must defend national sovereignty. I think that's a pretty powerful statement. And to do so on that basis, that we're not going to allow the United States to step all over our dignity.
And just briefly explain, what is El Zócalo? Mexico City.
Zócalo is, anybody who's ever been to Mexico City, it's that big square at the center, at the heart of the city. It's surrounded by the cathedral on one side, the National Palace on the other, and the Palacio de Ayuntamiento on the other. So it's kind of like the heart of power in a lot of sense. It's actually built on top of the original location where the Aztec civilization began here in Mexico.